Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Christian Sager. So, Robert, you just got back from a trip to New York City.
I checked out the World Science Festival this year. I've checked it out a couple times in previous years, and it's always a blast. There are always some wonderful talks, wonderful panels, as well as things like street festivals with lots of, stuff for kids.
Yeah.
Various interactive events.
They have like a Neil deGrasse Tyson dunking pool.
No. I think he has participated in the past and I think sometimes shows up in the audience if the talk is.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Something that interests him.
Yeah.
I took in several different talks, came back, with a lot of ideas
right.
Either in my head or in my notebook for the show. And thought that today we could jump in and talk about one of the topics that was covered, and that is the realm of synthetic biology.
Yeah, and so we should clarify what synthetic biology means, because when you first said it to me, I thought, oh, we're going to talk about androids, or like
yeah.
The Vision from the Avengers, right? He's a synthetic human being, right? That's synthetic biology. Sure, yeah, but like what we're talking about here is something very specific. Genetic engineering.
Right. Yeah. So I have to admit too, when I hear synthetic biology, I think of the synthetic, humanoids from the Alien series.
Yeah.
With their white blood, splurting all over the place. That sort of thing.
Yeah. Lance Henriksen.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the one in the first one?
Ian Holm.
Yeah. Ian Holm. Yeah. They played the villainous one. That's the kind of stuff that may come to mind, and we'll also get into some of the other sort of surface level interpretations of what's going on. But ultimately, this episode is about demystifying the topic just a little bit, like getting down to the basic nuts and bolts of what is up happening when
yeah.
we create synthetic biology, when we genetically engineer an organism, and then also discuss some of the possibilities in the some very fascinating near future possibilities for synthetic biology, as well as some of the amazing things we're already doing that mm-hmm. that maybe you just haven't heard about because they're too everyday, or they are You know, they're not as sexy just on the surface of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can already hear alarm bells ringing in our listeners' ears going, oh, GMOs, are genetically modified organisms. They're going to talk about this. In fact, after we did the what we called the organic panic episode, the organic foods episode, a lot of people wrote into us and said, you've got to do GMOs. I can't believe you didn't talk about GMOs during this. It's something that's it's a topic that's hot on people's minds, right? Especially science-oriented listeners. This is not going to be directly about GMOs, but obviously we're going to be touching on that here and there. And genetically modified food, but this is more, I would call this more of like an overview of like how the science actually works on it, more than a like, this is why it's so bad for you, right? This is why it's not bad for you, right? Like that expectation that we've, I think that like news media has sort of, taught us to expect from anything that has the word GMO on it in a headline.
Yeah. So hopefully, even though we're not going to discuss GMO a lot, this podcast episode will give you some material, some food for thought that'll help you, figure out exactly where you stand on the topic.
You can go forward and kind of dig around and do your own homework based on the stuff that we present to you today. So this presumably came out of a panel that you went to, right? So tell me about the panel.
All right. Yeah.
So tell us.
Well, the panel was, this particular discussion was titled, It's Alive, But Is It Life, Synthetic Biology and the Future of Creation? Which is a wonderful, wonderful title.
Yeah.
It was moderated by Robert Krulwich of Radiolab.
Oh, okay, cool.
And the participants, if you're familiar with any of these individuals, I mean, if you've read about synthetic biology at all, some of these names have come up. Geneticist George Church, synthetic biologist Drew Indy, technologist Tom Knight, and synthetic biologist Pamela Silver.
Now, from the research that we did today, George Church is a big name in this
field. He is a huge name, yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool that he was actually there to talk and defend his ideas.
Yeah. Now, granted, the defending ends up being kind of a strong word, because some of my favorite World Science Festival panels have involved kind of incendiary figures they don't get into all-out fights, but they get into sort of heated academic discussions.
Yeah, science war?
Yeah, a little bit of science war, or even like science versus humanities war.
Okay,
like that's
sure.
The stuff I often find most engaging.
Yeah.
Here you had four individuals who are all more or less on the same page.
Oh, okay.
There are certain disagreements that they seem to have.
Yeah.
But then given their closeness, they were not all that ready to, engage in some sort of discussion about those disagreements.
Well, there's also sort of a level of professionalism that you should bring to public appearances like that, especially if you're debating big ideas like this. But from what I've read about George Church, apparently there is a side to the science community that just basically ostracizes him, and like he's had events, like press events before, where he wanted to talk about ideas that he had or work he was doing, and people in the community just were like, nope, like we don't want to have anything to do with this because we think he's unethical or something like that. And then he sort of later clarifies and is like, whoa, you guys are taking this too far. Like we'll get into that throughout the episode, but he's a controversial figure.
To seemingly to a mild degree.
Yeah. Like, probably in a niche community too. Yeah. It's not like he walks down the street and people are throwing tomatoes at him.
Right. I mean, he's certainly not any kind of a fringe scientist or anything of that nature. But, he's engaged in work that deals with genetics and deals with the human genome, and that can be a hot button issue.
Yeah.
If for no other reason, because we have the word human in there. And he's actually campaigned against using like human in the title for things of this nature. And his point is that, it's not all directly related to the human genome.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of genomes that are being discussed and tinkered with here. And you kind of, you risk weighting the work down by shackling it to all the complexities and the potential, hot button issues surrounding human genetics.
There are many of those, and we're going to sort of go in and out of those as we cover the basics here. So let's start by just answering a very basic, what is genetic engineering? We've all heard that, right? But what does that actually mean?
Genetic modification or genetic engineering, this just means inserting genes from one species into another to give that organism new abilities or characteristics. It's taking the blueprint, essentially, for one organism and cutting and pasting a little bit from another.
Yeah, I like to think about it after reading this stuff as giving them superpowers, but they're like really kind of lame superpowers, right? Like we're talking about, in the case of bacteria, you go into the extra rings of DNA around them, which are called plasmids, and this bacteria, this gives the bacteria their extra abilities, right? Which I refer to as mutant powers. Let's think of them as like X-Men. So like maybe you've got a particular bacteria that's immune to antibiotics and that's its superpower, or maybe it can make a toxin, right?
Right.
So we are altering those plasmids so that they have different powers, right? So rather than the, having a bacteria that can, be resistant to antibiotics, maybe we're changing it so that it produces insulin.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can also think of it in terms of, it's like editing a paragraph in Word.
Yeah.
You can take, if you're given it, so you take a paragraph out of any classic, work in English literature, right? Take a paragraph from it. You can take some words out of it. You can take a sentence out of it, replace it with a sentence from another work. However, you're limited. It has to be the same language for
right.
it to make sense.
Yeah.
Certain passages are not going to work when just inserted into it. A certain amount of thought
yeah.
has to go into it. Essentially, it has to be closely related to the passage you took out. But you can still change, you can tweak, you can shift the meaning of that paragraph after you've done your little copy and paste exercise.
Yeah, so genetic engineering is kind of like William S. Burroughs' cut-up method, right?
Yeah,
and
I think so.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
That is very apt, as we'll, as we'll get into. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There's a lot of trial and error given our current state of genetic engineering.
So then synthetic biology, which is what we're primarily talking about here, is sort of like the next step in this, right? What we're aiming for with the genetic engineering.
Yeah, and this is essentially like successful synthetic biology via genetic engineering is to create that that passage, that paragraph that after you've tweaked it, it works in a new way that benefits us. So in short, we're talking about the design and construction of biological modules, biological systems, and biological machines for useful purposes. So we're tweaking genomes, tweaking genetic code to alter the biological results. That might mean tweaking the immunity of an individual, be that an individual human in the, the future sense of the word, or in a bacterium. It can also mean imbuing certain biological properties or altering the results of existing properties. And there are a number of reasons to do this, and not all of which have anything to do with humans or human health or even food that we eat.
Yeah.
Many are purely manufacturing, and many are agricultural as well. But we're often talking about genetically engineering bacteria to produce new products. Bacteria already produce products, but we can tweak them to make products that we want.
Yeah, and so the benefit here is usually this is cheaper, right? And maybe better for the environment, depending on what our traditional method of producing these products is, right?
Right.
So we'll talk about petroleum later, but like, you've got an example here about rose oil, right?
Yeah, this is one I'd never heard of this one. And this example was brought up by Tom Knight, on the panel, who actually worked with this process. So this involves rose oil. Rose oil is an important essential oil in perfuming, but here's the thing. You have to process a lot of roses to extract it.
Sure.
And the process of extracting it involves some pretty terrible chemicals, and then you have to remove the human allergen that's in there as well.
Right.
So it's costly. It's chemically a little bit gross.
All of this so we can spray ourselves and smell like roses.
Exactly. But what if there was a better way, right? So Knight was contracted to engineer a yeast that produces rose oil, and did this by hitching the rose oil producing genes from the rose to the yeast. In other words, genetically engineering a yeast making yeast into a rose oil making yeast.
Yeah, and yeast seems to be a pretty much go-to thing for scientists when we're talking about this genetic modification, right? Like especially like the insulin stuff we're going to talk about later and other things.
Yeah, the kind of road has been bacteria and then yeast.
Yeah.
And from there, even more complicated organisms. But this is, this thing with the rose oil is interesting. The rose scent is actually 200 different chemicals, it turns out.
Wow.
And different roses have different smells. So the process involves making individual chemicals that you then would mix together to get the desired smell. But the manufacturers here of those chemicals are the yeast.
Interesting. Yeah. So I'm wondering if you can get like one batch of yeast and you altered multiple bacteria within the yeast, potentially 200, mm-hmm. so that they're all producing the various chemicals. So it just smells like roses.
Huh.
Who knows?
Maybe,
I mean, I'm
yeah.
sure somebody out there knows, but it's, this stuff is so complex. And I think this is one of those science issues that like, we very easily gloss over when we're reading science news or listening to reports in the media, especially on GMOs, right?
Like, right.
Like knowing the actual process, like how we do it, how it works, I think breaks down the mystery of it a little bit more so that we're able to think a little clearer about the ethics of it.
Yeah, I mean, even for my own part, attending this panel kind of brought me up to speed on a lot of the techniques here. Whereas in the past, I've really kind of retained this like childhood mad scientist understanding of it, where I'm just like, oh, genetically engineered organisms. I instantly think brundle fly and don't explore it a whole lot more.
Yeah. I immediately go to like the X-Files conspiracy to genetically modify human beings or so that like whatever they're susceptible to a disease that bees are going to sting us with or something, you know, like some kind of sci-fi mad science type thing. Yeah. And I think that, you know, for various reasons, like it's not, I don't want to like dispel the notion that like there aren't unethical occurrences of biomedical or not biomedical, but bioengineering. But, you know, it's important to keep it all in context.
Right. So some of the basics of how we do it, let's just, you know, boil this down. It's pretty interesting what we're already doing, what's already out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of it revolves around these standard blocks or biobricks of genetic information. Now, previously, the source material for these biobricks, these blocks, was we got them from the smolts of spawning salmon.
Huh. But that's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder why salmon. There must be something about them that make it particularly easy.
Well,
to
I mean,
it,
you had a farming environment, so there were plenty of them.
Yeah.
And then the smolts are, you know, they're new young salmon that are in this stage of rapid change.
Yeah.
But the problem here is that it meant that the pharmaceutical companies that were using the smolts, they were dependent on the salmon industry and their potential fluctuations in the salmon market. So they developed the means to create synthetic DNA from scratch to cut out the harvest entirely.
Yeah, so they don't even have to use the natural DNA from these salmon anymore.
Right.
They're just making it in a lab.
Yeah, and we're already at the point where you can look up a genetic recipe on the internet, you can print it out, you can order the DNA you need to produce it, and then you have to move on to the tricky part of putting the DNA back into an organism and making it work.
Yeah.
And the process of assembling the DNA, prior to this point, prior to the sort of, you know, the Frankenstein moment, the life moment, it's actually a lot like a printing scenario. So if you have DNA in powder form, a machine spits the chemicals out in descending order. And at this point, it's just, you know, unloving organic chemicals. But it's the first step.
Yeah. This is the sexy science news headline that at least we tend to see a lot lately, right? Like that comes across our desk in a press release and is like screaming, please put me out there. Talk about me, right? Which is like, can you believe it? Like we can print life. You know, this like Victor Frankenstein stuff that, you know, seems to attract reader attention or fear. Mm-hmm. So when you break it down though, like the bacteria that we're talking about here, they contain a single chromosome, and this chromosome has all the information that they need to survive and reproduce. Now, I want to go back to what I said before. Around that, there's the extra rings of DNA called the plasmids. Those are the things that we're genetically altering. But we can't just make it do anything, right? It's not like you can take yeast and like turn it into, I don't know, like titanium, right?
Yeah. Like again, think back to that analogy of taking a paragraph, say out of Moby Dick.
Yeah.
You can tweak it a lot. But it, but if you tweak, how much can you tweak it to make it not about whaling and make it about, you know, making love on a space station?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, one thing we're going to bring up and is again, like, going to be like a ding, 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 like danger term for listeners is E. coli is used a lot in this process. And for instance, E. coli can only be used to make proteins. So there's a limit to what we can do with this. It's not like, we found the philosopher's stone and we have the alchemy to just change one substance into another, right? Any old substance.
Right.
And there's four categories that we use for applications with this. There's medical, energy, food, and environmental. Now, food is the one that people usually get pretty worked up about, but also the one that people, are particularly nervous about, at least in the sort of sci-fi mad scientist sense, is the human genome.
Yes.
Wow. And we're talking about, when we're talking about insulin, we're talking about something that saves people's lives.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is actually, insulin's a big deal. And to lay out just how we're using the technology, the first biosynthetic insulin actually went on sale in 1982.
Wow.
And then, yeah. And today about 70% of the insulin sold worldwide is produced by engineered organisms, either E. coli or yeast. And it's just as safe, but cheaper to make. As animal derived insulin, and it doesn't depend on cows or pigs.
So I don't have experience with insulin, but I have a friend who's severely diabetic and has to, you know, uses insulin constantly. Mm-hmm. So you diabetics out there, I'm curious if this is something when you buy your insulin, if you're aware of, if you're buying synthetic, like, do they ask you, do you want synthetic or do you want animal based? Or if it's just, you don't really have a choice in the matter. You just get whatever they give you at the pharmacy.
Well, I would assume that, I mean, certainly, I know a lot of people would like, who have to take insulin would want to make that, like an ethical choice.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Choose not to have pigs involved.
So, for instance, my friend is actually vegetarian, mm-hmm. the one who is diabetic as well. Yeah. So he probably wouldn't want that.
But at 70%, it seems that it's pretty much saturated the market.
Yeah.
Certainly here in the West.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
So, from there, where do we go from insulin? Well, let's talk about just one human chromosome, chromosome 11. All right, this involves 135 million base parts.
Whew.
So you're looking at a price tag of, again, estimated $4,050,000.
No, that's whatever. Yeah, we've got that. The show makes that in like an episode, so we're fine.
But yeah, we are actually paid in base.
We're only
DNA
yeah,
parts,
it's yeah. The true story. We're only paid in DNA.
All right. So from here, what have you wanted? What have you wanted to do? The big step, the Frankenstein step. What if you wanted to create a synthetic human genome? We would be talking, hypothetically, we'd be talking about spending $90 million for 3 billion base parts.
So that's how complex the human genome is when we take this up to the full scale. Now, keep in mind, this sounds like science fiction, right? But I also want to put a pin on this. Remember that the U.S. government has spent around $430 million already on researching this kind of synthetic biology just since 2005. The U.K. has invested another $160 million. So this is something that's actively being worked on, and our money is being spent on it in piles.
Mm-hmm.
But also, less than 5% of that money has been spent to explore, quote, the ethical, legal, and social implications. So, okay, here we're like, we're bleeding in a little bit into that ethical area, right? That, well, the U.S. government, a little bit of that money is, well, is this okay, right? Like, do you remember, this is like, this always stands out in my head, and I might have brought it up in the podcast before, but like, clearly it must have been over a decade ago. During one of George W. Bush's State of the Unions, he mentioned, like biomedical engineering as being a bad thing and animal human hybrids. And in fact, you know what, where it was? I think we talked about, Joe and I talked about it on the X-Files episode.
Oh yeah, I do remember this. It was a ban on animal human hybrids.
Yeah. And at the time I was like, wait, is that that's a thing we need to be worried about? Like werewolves? Like what do we, and now it's like, well, okay, like now I think, I see this. It's like he's looking at a line item somewhere in a daily report, and it's about this 5% about the ethical nature of whatever they're doing here, right? And what I don't know that it was necessarily in this particular field, but, you know, some other government research that involved animal-human genetics.
Well, this also, this is, of course, this is not an area I've really researched yet, but how much of any given endeavor's budget needs to be applied to moral
ethics
and ethical concerns?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to underscore the importance of it.
Right.
Clearly,
yeah.
I mean, that was something that came up in this talk a lot, and there are discussions, and there are a lot of procedures that are in place to safeguard what they're doing and to keep ethics in mind. But how much does that end up costing? Like it seems like it might be a little insane to say, oh, if you're going to spend $2 million on this bit of research, spend half of it or even spend a fourth of it on ethical concerns.
Yeah. Is there some like base formula that they teach you in science school? That's like for every laboratory experiment you do, 20% of the time has to be spent on the ethical nature of this or something. Yeah. I mean, I think it's only coming up here because of what we're talking about, because it's genetic engineering.
I mean, that being said, certainly history has shown us that scientific and technological advancements often outpace our ability to cope with with the ramifications on our life and our laws and sometimes on our ethics.
And also having read, you and I both, having read many a science fiction horror story, where something goes horribly wrong in a laboratory accident. yeah, of course, like I can see why the fear is there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't see, Jurassic Park would have been a very different novel had nothing gone wrong.
Exactly.
All right, so you're probably wondering, okay, what now? If you build this thing, you build this this synthetic bit of information, how do you bring it to life? How do you summon the lightning and get everything crackling? Well, all right, this is how it goes down. And it may sound super simple, and this is the overview, but it also, I think, demystifies what's going on here. So you have the segment you want. You simply scoop out the old segment in a living cell and you place in the new one. Sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah.
It's this was described
it's like a watermelon baller.
Yeah. And this was actually described by some of the experts on this panel as being a kind of essentially learning by disassembly and reassembly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you know nothing about a car, you bring the car in, you take parts out, take the engine apart, try and put it back together.
Yeah.
And see if it works.
Yeah, and maybe you put in like a nitrous attachment, like in those Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah,
and that makes the car faster.
Yeah, in a way, genetic engineering, creating synthetic organisms, is kind of like if you or I, not being car people, were to try and install
it's just as foreign to me. I think it would be interesting. You know, it'd be fascinating is to get Scott from Car Stuff, our sister show here about automobiles, and he knows a ton about cars. Get him to sit down with a genetic engineer and have the two of them sort of compare and contrast.
Yeah, I mean, with the difference being that Scott may ultimately, I believe he probably knows how a car works.
Yeah.
And one thing that was pointed out, I believe, by Tom Knight was that we don't necessarily understand how the organism that we're tinkering with works in the broad sense. Again, we are learning about it through disassembly and reassembly. But essentially what happens is you hook this stuff into the cell, and then it's just, you see what happens. You essentially try and start the car, except you don't, there's no lightning involved. There's no, you know, technique to say, come to life. It's more like watching and seeing if the cell dies. If it dies, then it failed. But if it remains alive, and then certainly if it reproduces, if the cell splits, etc., then you have successfully booted up the cell. And that's the terminology they use.
Yeah, they use a lot of, and rightfully so, as we're going to discuss, they use a lot of the same language that we use to describe data in technology.
Yeah, and that makes sense because there are a lot of different disciplines involved here. And in fact, Tom Knight, the technologist that I mentioned before, he got involved in synthetic biology. He was an electrical engineer at MIT.
So he
may be the one that's bringing a lot of this language in. But certainly, you know, we have to have a metaphor to understand what we're doing, and oftentimes programming is an easy go-to.
Yeah, absolutely. Which brings us to, all right, so there is this crazy experiment. Craig Venter, I believe, is the one behind this, right? And this is like one of the primary ones. So why don't you throw this out at the audience?
Yeah, this was an important first. So May 2010, Craig Venter's team became the first to successfully create what was then described as synthetic life by synthesizing a very long DNA molecule containing an entire bacterium genome and then introducing this into another cell. And there's a lot of crazy fun details here. He seems like quite a character. He actually added his own name to the bacteria genome, like
this
coded
is like,
in there.
This is like those Indochino jackets that we have talked about on the show before. You can get like your name embroidered on the inside.
Yeah, yeah.
He just got it embroidered on the genome.
Yeah, he did. And then not to be undone, he also later wrote a book in English. I believe you have the title of this book here in your notes.
I don't have the title actually, but I have some more information about it. It's a book that was written by George Church and Ed Regis about synthetic biology. It's 53,000 words, as well as 11 images and a bonus computer program all of which were encoded onto the strands of DNA. So you can see now why the apt metaphor language for using data storage and data technology language works here.
The crazy thing, too, is by encoding that in genetics, he essentially published the thing 70 billion times.
Yeah.
And making it the most widely published book in human history.
Yeah.
Outpacing the Bible, Moby Dick, whatever you want to throw into the race. He just went ahead and wiped it out. And all in the area about the size of a fingernail.
Yeah. And it's like I'm imagining that you've got some bioorganic David Cronenberg, smartphone in the future that you're able to slip the DNA vial into and it pulls up like a Kindle. Mm-hmm. You're able to read the book off the Kindle. Here's the crazy thing about this. And this is another one of those like boom headlines. Like I remember in our pitch meetings a couple weeks ago, somebody brought this up as like a story. DNA is so dense that 1 gram of DNA can theoretically store 455 billion gigabytes of data. So think about this. 4 grams, just 4 little grams of DNA could hold every piece of data the world produces in a year.
Huh.
So, it lasts longer than your phone or your computer does too. It lasts for 3.5 billion years. So if we can figure this out, this is like an entirely new way to transmit information and to store information, right? Like we've talked before about ways to store information as if society collapses, right? Like, like data storage might not work. Books would get burned or books might, be waterlogged or something like that. And like one of the, I think if I remember correctly, like one of the best ways to do it is to like currently like etch, information into like these titanium, like super dense, super strong metal, cubes. But like with this DNA thing, that wouldn't even be necessary. But here's the thing. It's copying DNA, copying the data onto the DNA is currently like very time consuming, prohibitively so. And DNA storage technology, it still though, it's improving at a pretty fast rate. So there's a lot of interesting possibilities for our future. Like I said, maybe we'll have, you know, some David Cronenberg style, like existence smartphones or whatever that will be, they'll be half a iPhone, half, I don't know, like little biological globule thing that we stick DNA vials into.
Not to jump ahead to sci-fi considerations just yet, but, in all of these various scenarios where ancient, you know, astronauts or some sort of super advanced race creates life on Earth, be it a Star Trek or a Prometheus type of situation, I wonder, has it ever been explored? And surely it has. What if all the genetic information on Earth is just an external hard drive for some race? And maybe they're not even storing useful stuff. Maybe they're just putting like bootleg movies. And
Well, that's one of the things that I was thinking about, right? Is like, theoretically, you could do this to the DNA that exists in a human being, right? And I mean, if it's just one strand of DNA, I don't know, how much havoc can that wreck?
Yeah. How much information can you code into a paragraph from Moby Dick without, without destroying its ability to function as a paragraph in the narrative?
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
But of course, we're a long ways away from that. Right now, synthesizing DNA is a difficult and error prone endeavor.
Yeah. So there's this pretty in-depth long form article in the New York Times that came out, let's see, like a couple weeks ago, actually.
Yeah. There's been a lot of really cool recent reporting on this. I mean, this is one of those episodes we probably will not run a repeat of because everything will be different in 6 months.
Yeah. And it's, I just want to dive in and out of it a little bit because it provides some more basic information, especially in respect to the whole human genome thing. So this ability that we're talking about of using chemicals to manufacture human chromosomes, it's fascinating, but it's got people pretty ethically nervous, right? Because we could end up creating human beings without biological parents. That's the thing that people get really twitchy about, right? Is like, we've mapped the human genome. What if we write the human genome? What does that mean? You know, like, I'm thinking of like sci-fi scenarios, like, replicants from Blade Runner or something like that. Yeah. So people are terrified of this happening. So we're talking about following up on that work that the Human Genome Project did, being able to read the sequence of 3 billion chemical letters in DNA. Now, rather than read that this new project, which I believe is associated with George Church, is proposing that we would write it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds, like I said earlier, it sounds like an X-Files conspiracy, right? We'll like breed perfect soldiers, or maybe we'll copy people, right? We'll make clones of people or something like that. So there's all sorts of spooky ramifications. But Church, like I said earlier, he wants to clarify this isn't about creating people. He's not a mad scientist. He's just talking about creating a couple cells here, and it would be applied to all kinds of genomes, plants, animals, and microbes. So he's not, you know, this is when I read about how there were some people in the community who were like, oh, we don't want to have anything to do with that. Therefore, we're not going to attend his event where he's talking about this. You know, it's unethical. And he was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like calm down. This is all I'm proposing. Here's the thing. We're already doing this with yeast, as we talked about earlier. Remember? So, you know, we add numerous genes to yeast. It turns it into a production process that generates whatever flavorings, fragrances like the rose oil, insulin, all these things. Also, keep in mind, synthesizing DNA is not easy. We can currently only make strands with 200 base pairs. In comparison, a single gene is hundreds to thousands of base pairs long. And if we were going to synthesize those, what you have to end up doing, like for a project, like maybe the human genome thing, you have to splice together multiples of the 200 unit segments. So we're not there yet. You know, I mean, it's like literally Frankensteining, like sewing together all these base pairs to make it work. But there's breakthroughs coming, like Venter and the stuff that he was doing. And he copied an existing genome that was 500,000 base pairs long. He didn't create a new one. Yeast alone has 12 million base pairs, and the human genome is 200 times larger than that. So, I mean, we're talking about like just a prohibitively large amount of work until we get past that.
Not insurmountable by any means.
No, but, I mean, it could be done, sure, but it's, you know, it's not as easy as I think some of the reports like to make it out to be.
Right. We're not going to go from tinkering with yeast to making super mutants in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. On that note, on the super mutant note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into not only yeast, but yeast 2.0.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. So we talked about creating synthetic bacteria.
Yeah, and the importance of yeast to this whole process. Now, this isn't your father's yeast. No. This is yeast 2.0.
Yeah, that's the current goal, kind of shared goals of various labs that are working on the yeast 2.0 project. And there's a website for yeast 2.0. You can look it up, and we'll try to link to it on the landing page for this episode. But essentially, we're talking about continuing to alter parts of the yeast, to genetically engineer the yeast until it becomes something completely new. Mm. So it's a gradual thing. Like, we're going to keep tweaking that paragraph in Moby Dick until it is a completely new paragraph.
Yeah.
And it's important. It's an important step as well, not only because, you know, yeast is already become such a useful organism for our synthetic biological needs, but it's also a eukaryote. It's more complex. It's more like us. Higher cells, we're talking 12 million base pairs of DNA here, and then yeast also have sex. So they are, again, it's a more human model for us to work with.
And it's also, I would say, like, most people don't have ethical concerns about experimenting on yeast that they would, like, maybe, I don't know, like experimenting on ferrets or something like that, right?
Right. Actually, at the talk that I attended, Krolwich tried to sort of, he was really poking a lot of sticks at him, trying to, you know, get him to open up. And,
yeah.
So he's asking him about, like, do you feel weird? Do you feel, immoral when you tinker with the yeast?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, no, not at all. The yeast is, it is not a higher organism. It is not like even messing with a lab rat,
right,
or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they're using, like, their grandmother's sourdough starter or something that's in the fridge.
That's right. Some people are very, attached to their yeast in that regard. Now, in all of these discussions, one of the things that always comes up is sort of the Jurassic Park model, right?
Yeah.
Or just sort of your basic mad science. Because what always happens,
finds a way.
Yeah. You create something in the lab, and then
it goes wrong.
It goes wrong. It breaks out of the lab. It starts rampaging through the city. So especially when you read reports about tinkered E. coli, and certainly people have all of these negative ideas in their head about what E. coli are.
Yeah, you combine the words E. coli and GMO in a headline, mm-hmm. and people are going to freak out.
Yeah, people grow concerned. So it's important to note that there are a number of safety factors involved here. One of the biggest is that most lab organisms utilized in these experiments are pretty fragile, and they're going to be eaten, or they're going to die if they venture into the outside world. But for that very reason, that fragility, labs have to safeguard their experiments against viral infections in the lab, lest a virus wipe out operations inside your lab that can essentially put you out of operation for a couple of years even.
Yeah. And here's some more things to consider about this, right? So who's doing this? Corporations. Mm-hmm. For the most part, it's companies that are developing these new bacteria. Why? So they can produce products like rose oil or insulin or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And sell it on the market. Anyone who wants to use those, they have to pay a fee, right? It's sort of like if you want to download an MP3 file of a song, But if you play that song while you're butchering your family with an axe or something, the musicians who wrote the song aren't responsible, right? Like, just because they created the song, it's not their fault that you did that. So subsequently, the law actually says these corporations are not responsible if something bad happens while you're using the organism.
Okay.
So that's important to keep in mind as well. It's another, like, bend on the Jurassic Park thing, right?
Okay.
Like if those eggs get out of that Jurassic World lab, man, those altered eggs, and there's some tyrannosaur rampaging around LA, hey, it's not their fault.
All right, so you're using E. coli in the lab.
Yeah.
You have a lot of money invested in this project, whatever you're tinkering with the E. coli to do.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing you want is a virus to wipe out that E. coli that you're working on in the lab environment. So you're already, you know, what do? So you're already engineering the genetics. You're already tinkering with the genetics of the E. coli. Why don't you just go ahead and make that E. coli virus resistant?
Yeah.
And that indeed is exactly what we're doing.
Yeah. Now a refresher on E. coli. So we hear E. coli and we all go, ah,
yeah.
Right? But, let's just do like a basic breakdown here. E. coli is a bacterium, and it most naturally occurs in strains that are totally harmless. It breeds well in lab conditions, which is why it's used in experiments in biosynthesis. There's a lot of different strains of it. Only a few of them are harmful. Some even live inside the human body, and they keep the other harmful bacteria in our bodies under control. So they even help manufacture vitamin K in our body. I feel like E. coli is like the pit bulls of the bacteria world. Like,
yeah.
They've got, you hear that word and you go, oh, that's bad. But like, they do good things and they're like, they're kind of like gentle at heart, E. coli.
Yeah. They tend to only splash the front page of the newspaper or the top of the website, though, when they're involved in something terrible.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, of course, like if you get E. coli poisoning, it's a totally different matter. Now, it can be engineered to produce acrylic acid. In fact, this is what we use in a lot of our paints and adhesive, is acrylic acid produced from E. coli. That's generating 75% less carbon dioxide emissions than when we make it from petroleum. So that's an interesting thing. Like, you get into the ethics of it, like, oh, you shouldn't be tinkering around with E. coli. What if it gets out of the lab and whatever, right? But at the same time, like, we're protecting the environment by using this E. coli to make acrylic paints.
Indeed, there's an environmental benefit here.
Yeah, and you can use it to manufacture a lot more than just paint. You can do biofuels with it, hemoglobin, and possibly you can even use it as a delivery mechanism for anti-cancer drugs. And as we already mentioned, genetically engineered E. coli is used to make human insulin, so that's important too, right? That saves lives. It's just as safe as the animal-derived insulin, and it's cheaper to make. But again, people, you know, they're not comfortable with the whole playing God aspect of the science. It freaks them out a little bit. So there's an inclination toward that sci-fi horror story setup. Is it going to get out of the lab? What will it do to our environment? So that's why they put in safety switches into this when they're genetically engineering them. And this is very Jurassic Park as well, right? Like,
yeah.
Like we put the safety switch in there. They can't breed, but wait a minute. They're breeding, right? Like that kind of thing. But they do. They make it so that this E. coli can't survive outside of the lab without a particular nutrient.
That's right. The example I like to use in thinking of this is Snake Plissken from Escape from New York.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So Snake is a dangerous dude and you want to use him. But you don't, you're about to let him out, let him loose in the world. You need him to report back. You need him to do his job.
Yeah.
So they put a little poison capsule in him. So he's compromised. He has to come back if he wants that cure. So that, yeah, it's a similar thing here. They essentially, make the E. coli addicted to a specific lab chemical, and this it's known as BIPA, B-I-P-A. It's an amino acid.
Okay.
And it's not going to find its fix out in the world. If it goes out there and it doesn't come back, it's going to die.
Yeah.
And then additionally here, again, we keep coming back to Frankenstein, and I'm sure scientists hate it.
Mary Shelley hangs over them like a specter.
Yeah, cast a long shadow. But it's but just as Victor Frankenstein was horrified at the possibility of his creation reproducing, this may not be a problem for us. Dr. Church has said that because these synthetic organisms have a unique genetic code,
mm-hmm.
quote, it's almost a new kingdom of life. that would have trouble exchanging genetic material with any other life form.
Yeah. So, okay, another sci-fi or fantasy metaphor here then. It's Dr. Moreau's Island, right?
Oh, yeah?
Like, that's one of the big problems, I think, is if I remember correctly from the – it's been a while, but that horrible movie with Marlon Brando in it, I think that they had breeding issues. Like, he purposely created these things so that they couldn't breed without his permission.
Well, and that's – yeah, that seems to be kind of what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Now, in this talk, Drew Indy had his own example. He described it as more of a new language, and without a translator, the two kingdoms here can never converge. Which again kind of gets back into some of our linguistic examples we were making earlier.
So I think, like, it's fair to say that, you know, at least the scientists that we're talking about here are taking the steps necessary to make sure that this is a safe process. Seems like they're doing it for altruistic reasons, because a lot of these processes, whatever, they're either cheaper than regular processes or they're better for the environment, so on, right? It's not like we're just doing this to do it.
Yeah. Now, that being said, certainly oversight is important.
Yeah.
Continued, I think it's essential, and it's great that everyone involved here, they seem to be asking these questions. They're having meetings about it. They're, the press is involved and are able to look over their shoulders to a limited extent and see what's going on and keep everyone in the conversation. As long as the conversation keeps going.
Yeah.
And there's a certain amount of openness.
Have some transparency to it.
Hopefully
don't have
we can,
the cigarette smoking man in charge of things.
Yeah. that, all that being said, you know, and if the trajectory remains pure, if you will, we're looking at some really amazing possible future advancements. And a few of these specifically were mentioned in the talk I attended. For instance, probiotic yeast that functions as a diagnosis platform.
Mm.
So that being kind of like a medical technology application.
Yeah.
Engineered microbes that alter body odor on demand. That could be pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Especially, I'm not sure how that would exactly work. Maybe you have some sort of interface.
I don't know. Yeah.
And you can, you know, if you're threatened, you can skunk it up.
There's an app for that. You hit the button on your app, it makes you smell like roses. You hit another button, it makes you smell like a skunk.
Another one, the ability to manage mood and health via mood and health affecting bacteria.
Yeah.
This one really made me think, because we've had so many, I think we've even discussed on the show here, like how much more we're learning about the role that our gut bacteria plays
in our mental health.
Yeah. And just how we think, how our mood rolls out. And so if we're able to just the tinkering with bacteria level, if we can tinker with our gut bacteria, genetically in a way that benefits the greater expression of the organism, I mean, that's pretty mind-blowing.
You know, I just realized this totally ties back to the cyborg episode that we did. We are absolutely talking about making cyborgs, just genetically modified ones.
In addition to that, we're also talking about the possibility of making cell lines to resist cancer, to serve additional industrial purposes as well. Humanized animals for organs and tissue, that's one that probably sets some people's alarms off.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that this is sort of like you take a fox and you set it up so that it grows human lungs and you can take the lungs out of the fox or something like
that. Yeah, that sort of thing. Or, you know, pigs or other livestock organisms.
Or even like, do you remember that terrible movie, The Island, with Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor?
I've never seen it. I've seen some of the films it was based on, such as Parts, the Clonisar.
Okay, yeah, so you get the premise, mm-hmm. right? That they basically grow clones of you solely so that in case, you know, one of your organs breaks down, they just yank it out of the clone of you.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the problem is that the clones are sentient human beings that are walking around and have identities of their own.
Yeah, but the cool thing about this is you could essentially have the same scenario, but without the weirdness of and the horror of having human clones. If you could grow, you know, human donor hearts in a pig.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the idea. I like the idea of individuals who need organs having the ability to get them without having to, you know, wait out their lives on a list somewhere.
What if we grew human organs in a pig and then ate that pig?
Hmm. Now you're getting into that gray area.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm the vegetarian on the show, but like, I wonder what like a human heart bacon tastes like.
What What if it was humanized with your,
this is some real Hannibal
your
stuff.
Genetics, your DNA?
Yeah.
So essentially,
oh,
you're
eating
your
own
heart,
yeah. out of a pig. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Hannibal would have a play date with this.
And then finally, this is one that Church specifically brought up in the talk. HIV resistance, quote, for the entire population.
Now, that sounds like a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think it's difficult to argue with that level of power, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The ability to wipe out, human diseases in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, this all brings us down to some of the bigger questions, like, what happens if we create a truly synthetic human? You know, even though we've been making synthetic genomes for a decade, we've been using mammal cells for manufacturing. What if we made a synthetic being and not just a cell?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there are a number of lingering concerns there. Would you have two kinds of humans in the way that we're essentially talking about two kingdoms of life?
Yeah. Knowing the tendencies of the human race, I suspect that we would somehow create this, turn the synthetics into some kind of minority, right?
Yeah, or would we be the minority? Maybe
they'd be the upper class. Yeah,
but I mean, these are not ridiculous questions to ask as we're looking when we look at where we are with the science now and envision where it's taking us in the future.
Yeah.
And as I believe it was Drew Indy brought up in this, you know, we're already engaging in levels of this. So you may have, you know, you're having the genetics of an unborn child screened.
Yeah.
To see. If, you know, what the prognosis is for that child, and you have to make decisions based on that. Then what the next logical step is tinkering with that genetics.
We actually, talked about that mm-hmm. as a scenario in our cyborg episode. In a future listener mail episode, I want to read this. One of our listeners wrote in about how he had a similar experience with his son's birth, and they did have to do, I don't think it was genetic tinkering, but they mm-hmm. had to do sort of a pre-birth surgery on his son.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're already at the point where we're screening, and then the next step is actually tinkering with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then from there, what's wrong then with writing the code, tinkering with it even more if we're talking about, the best possible expression of human life?
Yeah. What if we get into a scenario where, all right, so here, let's pitch some potential scenarios. And I don't think that you and I are going to have the answers to these, but let me throw one out here. Let's say, there's a disease and it's killing off the whole human race. It's like a black plague.
Okay.
All over again.
You mean like selfie sticks?
Those. Okay. Yeah. And we make the only way to ensure that the human race survives is to make synthetic humans that are resistant to that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not naturally resistant to this disease, but the synthetic ones would be. Do we do it? Are they still human beings? If they're the only ones left, is that the human race?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, we've already, it's not like humans are existing in a natural state anymore anyway. I mean, we've already altered our evolutionary journey, you know? So this is just another way to technologically augment it. And ultimately in this scenario, we'd be talking about the long-term survival of the human race.
Yeah.
So go for it. Push go on that, I would say.
And then, you know, one of the things that we looked at was sort of like a teaching resource for, genetic engineering teachers, sort of the basics, to ask their students to think about the ethics of it. And they say things like, would you feed genetically modified organisms to your dog?
Not alive.
Right.
For some reason, that's the,
that's what you think immediately is like, there's a genetically modified rabbit. No, I think they mean like dog food or something like that. Yeah. How about this? Like, what happens if those get out into the environment? Like, again, mm-hmm. like use the dog food analogy. There's some kind of dog food. It's genetically modified. What happens if that dog food gets out into the world and is eaten by, I don't know, like an animal in your backyard or something like that? You know, what does that do?
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed some of the safeguards in place here, but certainly we can look to our history with just the spread of the invasive organisms around the world and the harm there. And,
yeah.
You know, we can't help but extrapolate what some of the potential problems could be with genetically modified organisms.
And the one that scares me the most, this is the one that I actually have a problem with. I'm less concerned about, or at least for right now, about the stuff getting out of the laboratory or the effects of the food that we're eating, things like that. What I'm more worried about is who should own these.
Yeah.
And how far does the responsibility that they have as owners of these go in a legal and ethical sense, right? And again, comes back to Blade Runner, right? Like, there's that corporation that made the replicants. Like, what's their responsibility?
Hmm. Indeed.
In that movie, apparently it's to hire Harrison Ford to hunt them down.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, like, that's like the furthest end of it, right? When you've like written the genome to create more than human beings. But like, when it comes to, so let's take the Jurassic Park example, right? Like, mm-hmm. You've genetically engineered a dinosaur. You think that you've set it up so that the dinosaur can't leave Jurassic Park because it has to get that particular amino acid, right? But then somehow or another, through the biology of these dinosaurs, life finds a way. They're able to breed. They're able to get out of the park. Who's responsible for that? Who goes and catches the dinosaur?
Well, the obvious answer here is that you need a wily mercenary who fails, and then a scientist who pulls it off. So.
Yeah, and one person who says, clever girl.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta have it. I do want to close with a more optimistic spin on all this, and this is one that, that Drew Indy threw out there in the talk. You know, there's a tendency to think about, especially the industrial applications here, and think of it as industrializing biology. And I think that's accurate to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking an organism and making it do the thing you want, for your benefit, which is also something that humans have done throughout history, just through agriculture. But there's also a big case to be made for biologizing industry.
Yeah.
So in doing so, just across the board, helping to create a more sustainable world,
mm-hmm.
you know, by making your manufacturing and your industrialization more in keeping with natural processes and not necessarily this, you know, grungy factory on the hill that is polluting the environment around it.
That's the difference between making paint with petroleum versus making paint with E. coli.
Yeah. So anyway, all of this is food for thought.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have any answers about the long-term possibilities here or even some of the short-term concerns. But in this episode, we wanted to demystify the process a little bit, as well as discuss some of the really big and, you know, ultimately mind-blowing ideas and possibilities involved.
Yeah, so if you out there, obviously I'm imagining already the emails coming in or the tweets or the Facebook messages about GMOs and what we did or did not cover. But, you know, let us know what you think. Let us know what we might cover in the future. And there's lots of ways to do that, right? I mean, I mentioned some of them, but we've got the social media platforms galore, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. We're on all of those as Blow the Mind.
That's right. And you can also check us out at stufftoblowyourmind.com, of course. And hey, wherever you listen to us, be it a Spotify, iTunes, wherever, if there's a way to rate us, give us a good rating. If there's a way to review us, give us a good review. That is a wonderful way to support this podcast without spending any money.
Especially because we're relatively new to Google Play and Spotify. So it would be great if we could get more listeners on those platforms. So one last thing. If you want to write us directly, send that mail to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.